Eager to.
Oh, okay.
Some hat.
Good. So we're on Daf Yud Beis on the Beis. And we're up to Omer of Ashi. Let's see how many lines it is from the top. You know, it's better, I think, to we can count it from the bottom. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines up from the bottom. Omer of Ashi, oh, thank you. Ki machlokes the edus, kach machlokes the chometz. We had a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, as far as the margin of error, how much is a shear of toes do we allow? Rabbi Yehuda allows for a larger margin of error. Right, so the shear of Rabbi Yehuda is a larger shear. He allows for a discrepancy of 2 hours, maybe even 3 hours. Whereas Rabbi Meir reduces, he diminishes the amount of mistake, of error. And that machlokes, with regard to edus, in terms of how to reconcile the two witnesses, is also relevant to chametz. And we have to get rid of our chametz earlier than the time that the Torah requires us to get rid of the chametz. And that is, according to Rabbi Meir, let's say 1 hour, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, 2 hours. So the Gemara comments on this pshita. Hainu hachte amrinon. I mean, this is what we worked very hard, whether it was Abai's interpretation, whether it was Rav's interpretation, where we tried to reconcile the contradictions between the various shitas of Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and the Mishnah and Sanhedrin as far as Eidus, and the various shitas of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir here in Chometz. So what is Rav Ashi adding here by dramatically saying, Kimachlokis v'edus, kach machlokis v'chometz? So Gemara says, Hakamash v'lan, what is Rav Ashi trying to teach us? And that is Shinuye Deshanin, and all the answers that we offered, Shinuyehu, they're reliable answers. That's what, and whenever we try to reconcile any apparent contradiction between Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir in Eidus, and Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir in Chometz, and we said, let's say, if you remember, we had a svara coin to Abaye, that Eidus is Mesura Lizrizim, right? That in Eidus, we have a very limited, if any, margin of error, because the Eidim have to be very careful about the time. Well, we gave another answer that maybe Chometz is different because we wanted to give him a little bit more time to prepare for burning the Chometz. Do you remember that discussion that we had yesterday? And we had another possibility that maybe we should worry about a Yom HaMa'unan, you know, a cloudy day. We had all these smarts. So Rav Ashi is simply confirming that we accept all these svaras, and we can reconcile Eidus with Chometz. Velo tema tanoihi. The other way is to say that maybe there's a machlokas tanoim with regard to the various opinions of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. That maybe the Mishnah and Sanhedrin expresses one view of Tanoim that Rabbi Meir holds, that a person can make a mistake of up to 2 hours, Rabbi Yehuda up to 3 hours, but as far as the opinion of our Mishnah, Rabbi Meir holds that a person would only make a mistake of 1 hour and Rabbi Yehuda 2 hours. So Rav Ashi says that's not true. There's no contradiction between the Mishnah and Sanhedrin regarding Eidus and our Mishnah regarding Chometz. Everything can be reconciled based on all the svaros that we said to differentiate between chametz and edus. Omar Rav Simi Bar Ashi, Lo Shanu. When it says in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin that if there is a discrepancy between the witnesses of 1 hour or possibly 2 hours, we can reconcile that discrepancy and we can validate the edus. Ella Shos. That's only if there's a difference within a period of time of hours. But what if it's not within a period of time, but it's with one period of time and another period of time. For example, in Echad Omer Kodem Hanetz Hachama, one says that the murder took place before sunrise. The Echad Omer Achar Hanetz Hachama. The other one identifies the time period as after Hanetz Hachama. Now here's a discrepancy of a half hour or less. Is a dusa v'teila. We're not going to allow for any margin of error from before Netzach Amo to after Netzach. Those are two recognizably different periods of time. Pshita says, why didn't I need Rav Simcha Bar Ashi to tell me this? Was there any possibility to say otherwise? Could we have possibly reconciled, you know, Kodem Netzach Amo with the Achar Netzach Amo? Elo, so then the Gemara reformulates Rav Simcha Bar Ashi in a way that he's telling me something that I wouldn't have known, that wasn't obvious. Echad Omer Kodem HaNetzacham V'Echad Omer B'Soch HaNetzacham. Notice there's a certain period of time which is called the beginning of Netzacham. So one witness identified the time period as before HaNetzacham, and the other witness identifies it as the beginning of HaNetzacham. A dusa v'teila, we can't reconcile this. So the Gemara says again, Hanami Peshita. In other words, if one person says it's before Netzachama and the other person says it's at the beginning of Netzachama, then how could you possibly reconcile the two? So Gemara answers, Ma'u detema, it's possible, Travayu Chada Milsa Ka'amri. Maybe they're both saying the exact same thing, and they're both talking about the same moment of time. And in fact, the murder took place before Netzachama. And here we're turning to Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, V'soch HaNetzachama, which implies that it was already after the beginning of HaNetzachama. No, Begiluye Havakoi, there was some sort of a glow, let's say, and that Ha'ara, you know, that glow was the Hurei B'Alma Hutachazi. You know, what he really saw was little Nitzotzos, it's called here in Hebrew, of Or. And he already thought that was the light of the sun, and therefore he called it B'Soch HaNetzachama. It was really before HaNetzachama. You know, like there's some sort of reflected light even before the sun appears on the horizon, and he identified that with HaNetzachama. He was really jumping the gun because HaNetzachama didn't happen, but the, you know, astronomical, you know, manifestation looked like it was already in his in mind. That's how he interpreted it as after Netzachama. In which case, he really meant to say before HaNetzachama, which is exactly what the other witness said. And therefore, there's no discrepancy between the witnesses. Kamash Malon, that's where Simi Bar Ashi wants to tell us. We're not going to assume that he made a mistake and he thought it was already after the beginning of Netzachama, when it really took place before Netzachama. If he identifies it as after Netzachama, we're going to take him at his word. That's the Chiddush here of Rav Simi Bar Ashi. Do you have, David, an English translation?
Yes.
How does he translate? I'm curious to know, because I'm operating here with the Hebrew translation.
As you should be. But, yeah.
What is Begiluye? Which is the top line.
Is it,
call it a glow or something?
The glow.
Oh,
the
glow.
The glow, yeah.
Very good.
The glow before sunrise.
And what's how does he translate Vizahure?
The sun's rays.
The rays of the sun. Oh, so let me read it again now with that glow and rays. I think we came very close to that. So he identifies it mistakenly as already the beginning of sunrise. Why? Because he saw a glow. Right? He stood in a place where from his angle he could already get the glow of the sun. Because the sun already, even before it rises, already is reflecting light on the horizon. But really what he saw was not the sun itself, but rather he saw zehure.
Rays.
I guess rays of sun. So he misunderstood or misinterpreted these rays of the sun and identified them as the glow of the sun itself. So he called it toch HaNetzacham. But you know what? It's a valid possibility. The Gemara is not saying that this is a ridiculous assumption. It's a reasonable assumption, but it's not enough to carry us over the hump and allow us to reconcile the witnesses, because we're still, at the end of the day, we're stuck with the fact that one witness said it was before HaNetzachama, The other witness said it was during Hanetzach Hama, meaning after the beginning of Hanetzach Hama. We can't reconcile those two. Yeah, David?
Is Hanetzach Hama mean you see the actual orb of the sun breaking over the horizon, the actual ball of the sun?
Correct.
Well, depending where you are, you could be by a mountain or a valley. Right.
Well, the halacha requires that if you would flatten the ground, so it's not too low and depressed, and it's not too high like a mountain, you would be able to see the sun. And there are ways of calculating that. Now, you could ask me the following question. Maybe that was your question. What if he's stuck in a mountain or in a valley? What would the halacha say in such a case? Oh, so let me formulate your question this. Let's say the two witnesses, Reuven and Shimon. Yeah, but the only thing is they have to see each other. It's a little bit complicated. But let's say, if you could imagine, that they saw each other, but Reuven's vision was blocked either because of a hill or something, and he therefore didn't see the sunrise, and he called it before Hanetzach Hama. But again, keep in mind the burden, this is guilty until proven innocent, meaning we're always going to assume that the discrepancy is irreconcilable, until we know for sure that it's a clear-cut mistake. Now, if in your case, given the position that he was situated in, where he was standing, let's say we had a video camera, and we could see exactly what he saw, or what he couldn't see because of the obstructions, then maybe on the Hanabi we would reconcile the two witnesses. But we'd have to know that for sure. We'd have to be totally secure about that. All right, let's go back to the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda now in Mishnah. When did the Rabbanon establish, what time on Erev Pesach, on Yudalid, does the Iser Chometz on a Rabbanon level begin? If you recall, according to Rabbi Meir, it begins with the beginning of the sixth hour. We call that 11 o'clock. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the beginning of the fifth hour, meaning at the end of the fourth hour, it's already Asur, that's 10 o'clock. However, Rabbi Yehuda says that between 10 and 11, meaning during the fifth hour, it's Mutar Bano. You're allowed to sell it to a guy. How do we paskin in this machlokas? When are we going to start the Iser Chometz? Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav, Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. That means that during the fifth hour, you're not allowed to eat the chametz. Again, you're allowed to get benefit from it during that fifth hour, and that's called tolin, which means that we don't eat it, we don't burn it, and then at the beginning of the sixth hour, we burn it. Amalei Rav Ol Rav Nachman, the name of Mar Halacha k'Rabbi Meir. What convinces you, Rav Nachman, that we should paskin l'chumra and take the strict view of Rabbi Yehuda? Why not say Halacha k'Rabbi Meir and let's postpone and delay the Iser Achila until the end of the fifth hour, the beginning of the sixth hour? And I have a push, or shall I say I have a proof, that would indicate that in fact we should be paskening like Rabbi Meir. And what's that proof? The sasam lantana kavase. Now, what does this mean? When you have a Mishnah that doesn't mention any names, I'll call it an anonymous Mishnah, that's called a Stam, then Rebbe deliberately omitted the names in order to teach us that we paskin like that Mishnah. So an anonymous Mishnah, which is called a Stam Mishnah, has a lot of weight in paskining normative halacha. So let's say you have two Mishnahs. In one Mishnah you have a machlokas, and then you have another Mishnah, which might be in the same Masechta, in a different Masechta, and in that other Mishnah, no names are mentioned, only one opinion is mentioned anonymously, then we paskin. Now, what the Gemara now is doing, and this is the whole thrust of Rava, is to show you that we have another Mishnah, not in this chapter, but in the next chapter, on Daf Chaf Aleph, and that Mishnah mentions no names and simply reflects the view of Rabbi Meir. That makes it into Stam Mishnah. And therefore, Rav Nachman, I don't understand why you preferred Rabbi Yehuda, not Rabbi Meir. This Nan we learned in the Mishnah, Kol Shah Shemutal Lechol Machil, meaning as long as you're allowed to eat it, you're allowed to feed it to your animal and benefit from it. Now, that could only make sense according to Rabbi Meir, because if you remember Rabbi Yehuda's shita was that we differentiate in the fifth hour between whether he's allowed to eat it, and the answer is no, and whether he's allowed to feed it to his animal, and the answer is yes. So that statement that whenever you're allowed to eat it, you're allowed to feed it to your animal, which let's say according to Rabbi Meir would be understood very simply as referring to the fifth hour, because you're allowed to eat it during the fifth hour, you're allowed to feed it to your animal in the fifth hour. Rabbi Yehuda in the fifth hour would say, no, you're not allowed to eat it, achilas adam, you're allowed to have hanah from it, achilas behema, feed your animal. So here we have a Stam Mishnah. This Mishnah is unqualified, there's no name mentioned here, it's an anonymous Mishnah that reflects the Shita Rabbi Meir. And therefore, I don't understand Rav Nachman. Why don't you pass like Rabbi Meir? So Rav Nachman answers, he loves Tomahu. That Mishnah is not a Stam Mishnah. And the reason is, Mishum Dekasha Mutter. Let's understand what this means, Dekasha Mutter. The word Mutter is superfluous here in this Mishnah. That's the question that we're asking, and that's going to lead us to reinterpret this Mishnah. What bothers us about the Mishnah? If this Mishnah would be reflecting the Shita of Rabbi Meir, then it should have said, quote, Kol Shasha Ochel Machil. What does it mean, Mutter Lechel? The word Mutter here is completely superfluous. It should have said, Kol Shasha Ochel Machil. And that would have been understood and would have reflected the Shita of Rabbi Meir. The word Mutter Lechol sounds like we're going to have to come up with some sort of a heter. There's something pushing us and compelling us to be matir. Now, I don't get it. What does that mean? If you're not allowed to eat it, then you're not allowed to eat it. If you're allowed to eat it, you're allowed to eat it. Why do you say that there's some sort of push, some sort of urgency that we're going to be matir achila? That's the nuance in the word matir here, or mutter, which is, as we said before, superfluous. So the answer to this is that we're reflecting the sheet of Rabbi Gamliel. If you go back to our Mishnah, you will remember that Rabbi Gamliel had a problem with truma. During the fifth hour, he was not excited about the idea of burning the truma, because we don't like to burn truma. You're not allowed to be mafsid kodshim or truma. So therefore, Rav Gamliel pushes the envelope and he says, you know what? Even though you're not allowed to eat, you know, you're not allowed to eat the chametz in the fifth hour, but nevertheless, we're going to allow eating a certain category of chametz. That's called trumas chametz, right? Trumas chametz can be eaten by the kohen even when a non-kohen, with regard to non-truma, which is chulin, is not allowed. He's enjoined from eating the chametz. So let's focus on the fifth hour. The fifth hour, which according to Rabbi Yehuda, is aser b'achila, period, even for truma, Rabbi Gamliel says no. You know what? We're going to find a heter during the fifth hour. We're going to allow achila. For whom and in what case? Kohen eating truma. If the kohen is eating truma, then we're going to allow it. And that's what it means that kol shashem mutter lahachil, meaning you're allowed to feed your animal because that's the fifth hour. The fifth hour, it's mutter banah, is mutter lechel. You're allowed to eat it. What does it mean? You are allowed to eat it, a special urgent matir, and that's truma for a kohen. So truma schametz is necheles lekohen ad sof shach hamishis, in order to circumvent and prevent hefseid truma. So it comes out that the din of achilas behema and hanas chametz is the same as the din of achilas kohen betruma. That as long as you're in that hour where you're allowed to feed your animal and benefit from the chametz, that's the fifth hour, you're allowed to feed the chametz to the kohen if it's trumas chametz. So now Rava turns to Rav Nachman and says, okay, wait a minute. You paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, I brought you a Stam Mishnah that reflected Rabbi Meir. So Rav Nachman, you answered to me, no, that Mishnah doesn't reflect Rabbi Meir. No, so who does it reflect? It reflects Rabbi Gamliel. So now we have a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Gamliel. So Rabbi comes back and asks Rav Nachman, V'nei Mamar, he talks to him in third person, why didn't he say that halacha k'Rabbi Gamliel? In other words, when Rav Nachman paskins like Rabbi Yehuda, he implies that during the fifth hour, all chametz is prohibited b'achila, even truma's chametz. Well, why don't you accept Rabbi Gamliel, who's reflected in a Stam Mishnah? And Rabbi Gamliel is the final word over here, meaning there was Rabbi Meir, there was Rabbi Yehuda, and now Rabbi Gamliel took a position on that machlokas. Now, here I want to mention a principle in Psach Halacha. How do we rule? So that's the next three words. If you want to underline those, it says, Dahavile Machria. The word Machria here is the critical word. And whenever someone is a machria, which we'll explain what that means, then halacha is kimachria. Machria is like the kingpin. We're going to paskin like a machria. So what's a machria? Machria literally translates as tip the scales. You know, you have two things on a scale, and they seem to equal each other. We have two opinions. In the Nimshot, we have two opinions that argue with each other. And if we can find a third tana, let's say in this case, I mean, again, the same thing could apply in a machlokas samurai, but let's say here we have machlokas tana. Now we have a third tana, and the third tana tips the scale, so to speak. That means he accepts one of the two opinions. He might have to brush it up a little bit and change it a little bit in order to make a compromise. And this is exactly what Rabbi Gamliel is doing. Rabbi Gamliel is sort of like sitting on the sidelines, waiting to see who's going to win the battle between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that chametz is also in the fifth hour. Rabbi Meir says that chametz is also in the sixth hour. Comes along Rabbi Gamliel and he says, you know what? I'm going to try to juggle a balance between these two shittas. On the one hand, I'm going to say that Rabbi Yehuda is right with regard to achilas adam, meaning chulin for a non-kohen. But then I'm going to accept Rabbi Meir's shita, who allows achila during the fifth hour, as far as kohen in truma is concerned. So now the position or the contribution of Rabbi Gamliel is called a machria. He's deciding between these two shitas. He's saying, I'm going to accept one shita vis-a-vis X, the other shita vis-a-vis Y, and that's going to be my compromise. So fundamentally, as far as Chulin is concerned, he accepts Rabbi Yehuda's shita, and Chametz is also in the fifth hour. As far as Truma, he accepts the shita of Rabbi Meir, and Chametz is Mutar Bachila during the fifth hour, with regard to Truma's Chametz. And therefore, we should apply the principle of Halacha Kedivrei Machria, that if you have two opinions, and then a third opinion comes along, and he decides which of the first two opinions he wants to accept, and he engineers some sort of a compromise in which he accepts one sheet in one context and another sheet in another, that's the one we're going to paskin on. And now we have two things going in favor of Rabbi Gamliel. Number one, we have a Stam Mishnah that seems to reflect Rabbi Gamliel. And number two, we have a principle called Halacha Kedivrei Machria. And if that be the case, then Rav Nachman, why didn't you say Halacha Rabbi Yehuda? You should have paskin like Rabbi Gamliel. Amar Leih, so Rav Nachman responds to Rava, Rabbi Gamliel, lav machriyahu. It's not that Rabbi Gamliel came along and he analyzed the two opinions of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda respectively, and then he decided that, you know, Rabbi Yehuda's right and Rabbi Meir's right. No, no, no. That was not the approach. But rather, Tam did nafshe ka'amar. He was expressing his own view, independent of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. He may not, it's possible, again, this is a historical question, but he wasn't even aware of the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. He was analyzing what should be the status of chametz erev Pesach before chatzos. So Rabbi Meir had his answer. You know, he didn't differentiate between chulin and truma, and they both could be eaten the whole fifth hour. Rabbi Yehuda had his opinion that there's no difference between chulin and truma, and they're both eaten during the fourth hour, but they're also in the fifth hour. And Rabbi Gamliel came along, and he had his own opinion. I'm just going to read to you this line over here. He has a footnote. He says, "Hayu nechshavim divrei Rabbi Gamliel lahachra, ach me'achash lo nirmas b'divreim sheish makom lechalik bein truma lechametz v'rak Gamliel chidesh chilek ze ein zu hachra el esvar mechudeshes." He says the following: the issue of truma, meaning trumas chametz, was not on the agenda until Rabbi Gamliel came along. Neither Rabbi Meir nor Rabbi Yehuda were sensitive or would appreciate and recognize any distinction between chulin and truma. The fourth hour is mutter. The fifth hour is a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, where Rabbi Meir says it's mutter and Rabbi Yehuda says it's also, but nowhere in the radar screen of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is there any hint at a possible distinction between Truma and Chulin. That was the Chiddush of Rabbi Gamliel. And Rabbi Gamliel was not coming to decide between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Had Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda taken a stand on what's the difference between Truma and Chulin, then you could say that Rabbi Gamliel was a machria. He decided to take one shita and prefer it over the other shita. But that's not so. It was Rabbi Gamliel who came up with the Chiddush and said, wait a minute, we have to worry about Truma's chametz because we can't be mafsid truma. So that was his own idea. The question I want to ask you is, but wait a minute, what about the principle of halacha kistam mishnah? Right, we've already established that mishnah at the beginning of the second perek, because of our diuk in the way we read the mishnah, it said mutar lechol, reflected the shita of Rav Gamliel. So let's go back to Rav's original question and his objection to Rav Nachman. Why not apply the principle of halacha kistam mishnah? Are you with me on that?
Yeah.
That question I don't see an answer to. If you have any footnotes there, you can see if anybody says anything. I'm looking here in the notes in the Masifta, and what am I finding over here? He says here, based on a sugya in Bava Kamma with a Rashi at the end of Masechta Bava Kamma, that the reason why halacha is kedivrei machria is because yachid v'rabim halacha kirabim. Right, so you have one against one, and then there's a machria who accepts one of those two opinions, and now it becomes two against one, and then we apply the principle of achri rabim lahatus. We pass like the majority view. Okay. Then he says, "May acher shall call din over machria yesh od shita masaya." So becomes a rov. Avak shalo is kiru ashnayim arishonim as far as chiluko shall ashlishi. If neither of the two original opinions that were battling each other mentioned the svara of the third opinion, then the third opinion is not coming to accept one over the other. Okay, fine. Now, does he ask our question here about halacha kistam mishnah? You see anything in your commentaries? No, nothing there? Oh, so he tells you here in the footnote to look at Tosus Dibra Maskil Rabban. Kushalari. The lema loch gram gamliel de sasam lantana kavase. Oh, so I'm not so dumb. Okay, good. I was getting really nervous. Okay, I thought that there was a piece of the puzzle that was totally omitted here, but here I didn't notice the Tosus. Tosus says that we have halacha kistam mishnah and midik tani mutar. From the fact that it says mutar, we proved that this mishnah reflects the shita of Rav Gamliel. Vafilu im mesafkale im yesh ledagdi peloshim mutar mla mikom kom neba halacha krabi meir oki Rav Gamliel to be manav shach ahi dechol shok echad min ayu osi. Oh, so he says that the Gemara vacillates as to whether or not we have to accept this diuk, and the word mutar should be interpreted as referring to trumas chametz and it's Rav Gamliel, or maybe the word mutar should be referring to even achilas chulin and then it reflects the shita Rabbi Meir. But either way, it's a stab mishnah that's against Rabbi Yehuda. So how can you tell me that the halach is? How can you, Rav Nachman, tell me the halach is like Rabbi Yehuda? V'yesh lomer da'i ibois emas samich. V'din hachra farish besof pirkin. So Tosus answers that the Gemara at this point is relying on the second answer of the Gemara, which we haven't read yet. We're about to read that. Let me just see if there's anything here to embellish this. We're on Daf Yud Gimel. Just give me a second. Where is it? We're on Daf Yud Gimel, right?
Yeah.
Oh. So he says, Yeshomra Ibois Emo De La Halon Samech Resh Mem Tes Hiksham Arsha Dain Koshe Mas Somra Matarets De Ka'omar Hai Lo Stomahi Yishuv Kashim Muta. Right, the Gemara was basing on the fact that Kashim Muta, so that means he held like Rebbe Gamliel. It says Ein L'dayek Yilashem Mutter. Okay, fine. Yishlomo Da Ibois Ema De Amir De Rav Sober Ketana De Kav Alocha Kerabi Lezer Ish Bar Tuta De Sober De Avchuma Necheles Rak Bisha Revis Is Omatosis V'Din Hachra Hainu Okay, that's something else. So in other words, if Rav, we're going to see later on, holds like one of the Tanoim, who holds a Trumas Necheles, Rak B'Shah Revis, so therefore it's not a Stam Mishnah. Now, I'm not sure if that Shita of Rabbi Eliezer is in the Mishnah or not. Okay, we'll have to see. So let's read the Ibois Seimah. The Gemara says the following. Rav Diomarki Hai Tana. Rav accepts the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, Ish Bar Tota. Ah, so that Shita of Rabbi Eliezer is quoted in a Brisa, not in the Mishnah. All right, so we'll see exactly how this answers up. Oh, so now where's Rav coming into the picture? You see, we emphasize Rav Nachman over and over again, but if you go back to Rav Nachman, he says in the name of Rav. So when the Gemara says that Rav, the Omar, etc., it means Rav Nachman in the name of Rav. And that Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, which we're about to learn, is what presses Rav to come to the conclusion that we pass like Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, even though we have a Stam Brisa, I'm sorry, because we, I said even though, what I meant to say is because, according to Rav, because we have a Stam Brisa that reflects the Shita of Yehuda, that's why Rav Paskin's like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. Desanya. All right, this I had trouble with. I'm going to try to. This is like my fifth time around, but I hopefully with your help we'll get through it. Arbasar shechalios b'Shabbos. Now, obviously, if Shabbos coincides with the 14th erev Pesach, which means that there's no way you can burn the chametz, so we have to find a way of fulfilling the mitzvah of tashbisu and destroying our chametz, which we cannot do on Shabbos. So therefore, the Brisa says, "Mevarin es hakol milufnei Shabbos." We're going to have to destroy the chametz on the 13th of Nisan, which is erev Shabbos, because we can't destroy the chametz on Shabbos, which is Yudalid b'Nisan, which is the normal date for the destruction of chametz. Here we have to be makdim and destroy the chametz one day earlier. Okay, now notice that it says mivarin es hakol, which means all the chametz that he has in his possession. Okay. So what do we do now? If we're assuming that we're going to destroy all the chametz in his possession on Yud Gimel, then that would include even Truma. Now, watch what's going on over here. The Truma, the Chametz itself, is actually Mutter on the 13th. It's even Mutter on the 14th, up until whatever hour, whether it's the end of the 4th hour, the end of the 5th hour. So we have a whole period of time here when the Chametz is really Mutter. And now we're going to destroy Truma. prematurely, so to speak, before the Shas Isur. But again, we don't have any choice, because what are you going to do with this Truma B'Shas Isur? You can't destroy it on Shabbos. So therefore, you have no choice but to destroy it on Erev Shabbos, which is way, way before the Shas Isur. And the Braisa here stipulates all categories of Truma. There are three categories of Truma. He says, Sarfin Trumas Chametz Tmeos. Okay, that's not a problem, because there's a separate mitzvah to burn Truma Tmeo, Truma that contracted Tuma. And now we have something called Tluyos. Tluyos means it's a Sofek Tome, which normally we would not destroy. We would sort of let it go on its own, and we'll see what will happen with it. But here, since it's Chametz, and he can't leave it over during Pesach, he's got to destroy it. So that's the Chiddush here of Tluyos. And then he says Utahoros. Now Tahoros means this is Truma that there's a mitzvah to eat, and yet we're going to destroy it. And a day and a half before it's Isur. Okay? So we have to see what's going on over here. Now, he points out here that there's a principle called Kishem Sha'asa L'tame Truma. You're not allowed to be Metame Truma according to the Torah law. Mishmeres Trumosai, the Torah says, that's in Bamidbar Yudches, is Kmochein so too, Asur Gam L'Sarfa. Because whether or not you Metame Truma or you burn Truma, in any case, you are not watching and protecting the Truma, so you violate the mitzvah of Mishmeres Truma. But here, since it's right before Pesach and it's Chametz, there's no Issur to burn the Chametz. The only problem is, why does he have to burn the Truma? Why can't he just be Mevatel the Truma? Bittel works on a Doraisa level. You may remember, let's just go back for a second just to remind ourselves on Daf Dalet Amud Beis, the Gemara establishes that Midoraisa, the Bittel Bi'alma Sagile. I'll read it to you inside. You can see it inside a Daf Dalet Amud Beis. It's like smack in the middle of the page. You'll see a Tosus Midoraisa, right? Midoraisa Bittel Ba'alma Sagile. That the Torah relies on Bittel. So you don't have to destroy the Chametz. And now you have Truma. Why destroy the Truma? Why not just be Mevatel it? He says, I forgot to mention Torah Dailon of Bittel. Mikomakom, Mikavon, Shesofa Lehi Oser, Vilaleches Leibud, Mutel Sorfa. In other words, even after he's Mevatel the Chametz, he still is not allowed to benefit from the Chametz. No, he's Mevatel the Chametz, and that protects him from Bal Yirah Bal Yimotzeh, it's a kiyum of Tashbisu, but the Chametz is still Chametz. And it's going to be destroyed. And therefore you're allowed to burn it. So he says the following. U'meshayrin min ha-tahoros. Well, what are we going to eat on Shabbos? Let's say you're a Kohen and you want to eat Truma on Shabbos. You have Chametz, you know, those are your Chalos for Shabbos. So you're allowed to leave over that which you know you're going to eat during Shabbos, before the Shas Isur. Again, you're going to have to wake up early and get a chapa, a quick early minyan on Shabbos morning, so that before the Shas Isur Chametz, you've already eaten this Challah. And Mazon Shtei Seudos. Now, we have a mitzvah of eating three seudas on Shabbos, but in the case where Shabbos is on Erev Pesach, it's almost impossible, virtually impossible, to be Mekayim the mitzvah of Seuda Shlishis, because Seuda Shlishis has to be, by definition, after Mincha, and at that point, he's already also Chametz. So how can he eat this challah, you know, that's Chametz? So therefore, we're going to salvage and leave over the volume of two seudos. Let's say one challah for one seuda and one challah for the other seuda. Now, this is the key line. K'dei lechol ad arba shos. So that these two seudos will be consumed by the end of the fourth hour. Divrei Rabbi Elazar ben Yehudi Ishbar Toto. Sha'omer Mishum Rabbi Yoshua. So this sheet of Rabbi Eliezer seems to imply that you're going to have to finish eating your your, in this case, Trumas Chametz by the fourth hour. That would reflect the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, now in Mishnah. And that's going to be the motivation why Rav Nachman, in the name of Rav, says Halachik Rav Yehuda. Oh, but did the Chachamim accept the Shita Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yehuda? Amru lo, the Chachamim turned to Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yehuda and they say Tahoras lo Yisrafu. I don't understand, why are you burning Truma Tahora on Erev Shabbos? Even if there's more, even the surplus beyond Muslim Shtei Sudos, Shema Yimtzu Lehem Ochlin. Maybe he'll, you know, find a Kohen that all of a sudden, you know, shows up, or maybe he invited the Kohen for a meal. And he'll be eating this truma during the Shabbos, during the course of Shabbos. So why are you so quick to destroy the chametz on Erev Shabbos? Now what bothers me here is, how is the Gemara trying to postulate that maybe guests will show up and he'll eat the truma? Well, maybe guests won't show up and then you're stuck with chametz. So maybe the Gemara's answer is bittul, that in the worst case scenario he'll be mevatel his chametz. But why burn the chametz when you have at least some sort of remote possibility that Kohanim will show up? Amar lehem, Rabbi Elazar answers, kfar bikshu v'lo matzu. The only time that he destroys the chametz in Erev Pesach is when he goes through the entire city. You know, he opens up the yellow pages, he calls up every Jack Cohen, and guess what? There's no Cohen available to eat his truma, lo matzu. So if he knows that, let's say, I know all the Cohenim, and I know none of them, you know, could possibly come and eat up all my truma, so then I leave over whatever I assume would be eaten, and then I have to destroy any truma that will not be eaten. And you might say, well, maybe some coin will come from outside the city. No, we don't expect any coin to show up outside the city. Omrlo Shema Chutz L'choma, outside the city limits, outside the walls. Lanu means these coinim who were in an inn. You know, they were staying in a hotel or something overnight outside the city limits. And then they're going to show up on Shabbos. Again, we have to assume that within the Tchum Shabbos, you know, when it says Chutz L'choma, it means within 2,000 Amah. I mean, because you're not allowed to walk more than 2,000 Amah outside the city limits. Amar Lehem, so Rabbi Elazar responds to them, L'divrechem, you know, if you're waiting for a possibility of someone who's outside the city walls, and he's going to show up on Shabbos and eat your truma, is aftluyos. What about the case of Suffolk? Why are you burning Suffolk Truma Tmeya? Lo Yisrafu, according to you, you shouldn't burn it on Erev Shabbos. Why? Sheva Yov Elio, maybe Elio Anovi is going to show up. And he's going to be poshed all the Sfakis, and he's going to determine one way or the other whether this Truma is Tmeya or not Tmeya. The Atare, maybe he'll determine that they're Tar. And you went ahead and you destroyed it? So again, basically the logic of the Gemara goes the following. Once you puncture the balloon, you're willing to say, well, you know, maybe Archim will come from outside the city. If you're worried about such an improbable but possible theoretical possibility, then why not consider the possibility that Eliyahu HaNavi is going to show up. And he'll tell you whether it's Tommy or not. Maybe he'll tell you it's Tar. Amrulo, he says, the Chacham responded, in this case, so we're talking about Erev Yontiv, is Muftach Lahem Yisrael Shein Elio Ba, Lo Biavi Shavuot, Lo Biavi Yom Tov. Elio Anovi could come any day of the week, but not on Erev Shabbos, or not on Erev Yontiv. Why? Why don't we want Elio to show up on Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontiv? B'nei HaTorch, we're so busy preparing food for Shabbos that if Elio shows up, it's going to be such a tirda. You know, we have to go out there and accept, receive, and welcome in Elio. We're going to be so preoccupied with Elio, we're not going to be mechin, we won't prepare enough for Shabbos or for Yontif. So we have no chashash, nothing to worry about, that maybe Elio Adavi is going to show up, and therefore he'll tell me that this truma that we think might have been Tomei was really Tar. Amru, And Chazal said that Lo Zozav Yishamat Shekavu Halacha Ki Rabbi Lozav Rabbi Yudish Bar Tosa Shamav Yishum Rabbi Yeshua. So in this debate between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer, we accept the Shita Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Eliezer said two things. Let's go over the two Chidushim of Rabbi Eliezer. Number one, he said that we're going to burn Truma of Chametz on Erev Pesach, meaning on the 13th of Nisan, in the case where Erev Pesach is Shabbos. And we're not going to assume that we need anything more than Muslim Shtei Seudos to get through the Shabbos, but no other Chametz is going to be eaten. And we're not going to anticipate that some coin is going to come in from Chicago. And that's one Chiddush. The second Chiddush is that when do we have to complete our two meals of Shabbos? It's Kedei Lechol Ad Arba Shos, meaning beyond the fourth hour, into the fifth hour, you're not allowed to eat Chametz. That's what we have in Erev Pesach Shechalios B'Shabbos. We have a whole business about when to eat the Chalos. First of all, you know, it's such a nervous tension, the wives go bazooties over this, because how do you eat the Chametz when, you know, it's Erev Pesach and you're eating Chalos? You know, so sometimes until you eat it outside, where they get these pitot, you know, that don't have too many crumbs or something like that. It's a big tension. But the other issue is, and this is not a tension issue, this is a halachic issue, by what time do you have to finish your seud if you're eating chametz? And the answer is, it depends on Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. And this brice of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Yehuda, Ish Bar Tosa, that reflects the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, because it says, Kedei Shalecho, meaning you have to finish your seud of chametz, Ad Arba Shos, before the end of the fourth hour. That reflects the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. My love, so the Gemara says that when it says that we lo zozim isham until they paskin like Rabbi Lozim Rabbi Yehuda, it means afilu lechol, even to eat and complete your meal of chametz by the end of the fourth hour. In other words, as I said before, there are two chidushim here in Rabbi Loza. One is relevant to Truma, and the other is relevant to the time on Shabbos that you have to complete and terminate your meal of chametz. Amar Papa Mishmei de Rabbi Lo Leva'er. What element in Rabbi Eliezer do we accept? That's only as far as biur, meaning that on Erev Shabbos, the 13th of Nisan, he has to destroy his chametz. And even Truma's chametz he has to destroy. That element in the Chiddush of Rabbi Eliezer we accept. But as far as when is the exact time of the Isra Achilus chametz, and Rabbi Eliezer happens to hold like Rabbi Yehuda that it's at the end of the fourth hour, that's the last moment you can eat chametz, that we don't accept. And therefore, according to Rav Papa, we reject this whole logic. And this brisa is in fact not a proof that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. And once again, you know, we're sort of stuck in, you know, back in the dark here, because Rav Nachman Amar Rav says Halach Rav Yehuda, and the Iboy Seima says that Rav holds like Rabbi Loza ben Yehuda, and that's because they paskin like Rabbi Loza ben Yehuda, but they only paskin like Rabbi Loza with regard to one din, but not with regard to the Shas Yisur Chametz. So now the Gemara wants to prove that Rebbe paskins like Rabbi Yehuda. If Rabbi Yehuda Nasi paskins like Rabbi Yehuda, then we understand why Rav Nachman in the name of Rav paskins like Rabbi Yehuda. The Af Rabbi Savar, and Rabbi also agrees, Leha dir Rav Nachman, meaning that the halach is like Rabbi Yehuda. The Omar Ravin Bar Rav Adam Maisav Adam Echad Shehifkid Diskia. You remember we said that Diskia is like a sack that's made out of animal skin, and it's used for as a saddle, you know, over a mule, and it was malea chametz. Okay, so he had this sack full of chametz. Eitzel Yochanan chakoka, and v'nikvuak bar v'ya chametz v'vatzveitz v'yotze. So what's going on now is that because there's a hole in the saddle, because it was eaten away by the rodents, the chametz that was contained in this saddle is falling out. right? It's going through the hole. And all the chametz that goes through the hole is being eaten by the mice. Ubalifnei Rebbe, and this, just one second, I just want to get the names. So it was Ravin Maisa Ba'adam Echad. Oh, okay, so we don't know the name of the person. It just says Adam Echad.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm sorry. No, the Adam Echad is the one who owns the chametz. Yochanan is the one who is asking the Shaila, because he's now the nifkad, meaning the chametz of the Adam Echad is deposited in the possession of Yochanan. So he's now watching a situation where the chametz is getting eaten by the Achbara. Now, insofar as he's a shomer, and his responsibility is to cut the losses of the mafkin, you know, he better do something really quick, because Pesach is quick in arriving, and you're going to be stuck with this situation. So this Yochanan comes with Lifnei Rebbe, and it's Erev Pesach, and he wants to know, should he sell this chametz? And now, again, it's not clear if he's selling it to a Jew or to a non-Jew. We'll get to that in just a second. So he comes in front of Rebbe, and he asks him, can I and should I sell it? Because, you know, this chametz is getting eaten up by the rodents. Or should I perhaps delay, because maybe the Bailim will show up and he'll come and eat it, this Ish Echad, this Adam Echad? Amalo, so Rebbe answers, Hamtein. He asks him a second time, Shnia Amalo Hamtein. Shlishis, he asks him a third time, Amalo Hamtein. In other words, Rebbe is consistently delaying the process of selling this chametz, because maybe the owner of the chametz will show up and he'll want to eat the chametz. And finally, Revius, when he got to the fourth hour of the day, then Rebbe says, "Now we're about to hit the the point of no return." What's the phrase?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if we wait another minute, the chametz is going to become totally awesome. There's nothing you can benefit from it. So he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, Amalamtein." Right? Of course, again, we're not yet up to the fifth hour, right? Chamishes, but when he got to the fifth hour, that's the point of no return. Go out and sell it. Why? Because any money that you get from that sale, and again, you're not going to get a very high price, but that will cut the losses of the Adam Echad, of the Mafkid who owns the chametz. Now, my love. Shouldn't we understand that when Rebbe instructs Yochanan to sell the chametz l'nachrin, he means to sell it to goyim and Kirav Yehuda? In other words, we're talking at the beginning of the sixth hour. No Jew is going to buy the chametz, because presumably, since he can't eat the chametz at that point, why would he purchase chametz? And not only that, if Yochanan wants to get a better price and bring in more funds on behalf of the mafkin, then he's best to sell to a guy, because a guy will pay full price. A Jew is going to give you a pittance, because what's the Jew going to gain from some chametz minutes before it becomes awesome? Oh. So now the Gemara thinks that since chametz at that moment, which is the beginning of the fifth hour, is asur b'achila, then there's no point to selling it to a Jew. A Jew's not going to buy it. Or if he buys it, he's going to pay you a slashed price. And that's why Rebbe advocated that you sell to a goy. If this be the case, then we have a clear-cut proof that Rebbe accepted the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, Rebbe, when he got to the fifth hour, he says, you got to go out and sell it. So the Gemara says, no. That's not how you interpret Rebbe. Omer of Yosef, lo, li Yisrael. In the fifth hour, sell it to a Jew. And the Jew is going to buy it, because the Jew's allowed to eat it. What do you mean a Jew's allowed to eat it during the fifth hour? Ki Rebbe Meir. Because Rebbe says, the Yisrael Chometz only chal in the sixth hour. So Rabbi Yosef now rejects the proof from Rebbe that we brought, that Rebbe holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Amalei Abai, Abai turns to Rabbi Yosef and he says, Eli Yisrael, if you're telling me that when Rebbe told Yochanan to go sell the chametz, he meant to sell to a Jew, is nishkalei l'nafshei? Why does he have to sell it to another person? In other words, Rebbe should have told him, take the chametz for yourself, evaluate how much you would be willing to pay for that chametz, put that money in a little pushka, put it on the side, and you'll give it to the mafkid whenever he comes by. So again, let's go over this. If we are selling chametz on behalf of the owner, even without his knowledge, but because it's getting so late that chametz in a minute is going to be asur, why did Rebbe advocate selling it to a guy? Bishlema, if he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, so chametz is now in the fifth hour, it's already asur to Yisrael, so he can't sell it to Yisrael. But if you hold like Rabbi Meir, so then we have a good idea. Let's sell it to Yisrael. Yisrael is allowed to eat the chametz for the next hour. So that's exactly what Rabbi Yosef said. That maybe it was that maybe we misunderstood Rebbe's instruction. Rebbe really was instructing the sale of this chametz to Yisrael because we hold like Rebbe Meir, and chametz in the fifth hour is still mutter. So Abai says, why did Rebbe instruct him to sell it on the open market to a Jew? He could have taken it for himself, and he'll eat it during the fifth hour, and whatever its value is, he'll give it back to the mafkid, to the owner of the chametz. Why does he have to run into the shuk, into the marketplace, and try to find someone who's willing to buy this chametz? So the Gemara answers, Mishum Chashada. Now these two words, Mishum Chashada, are the portal, how do you say the, what's the word they use today?
Link?
No, when you know, the jump off point, what's the word, I think it's the name of a vehicle. It drives me nuts when I can't remember a word. Segway.
Oh.
Is Segway a word also for a vehicle? You know those things they jump on?
Yeah, but it's called Segway. It's Segway. Segway is a thing you ride on, I think.
Oh, the Segway and Segway.
Segway is what
you're talking about. Oh, so it has nothing to do one or the other?
No.
No, okay. So that was my...
It's not Latin for me, one follows the other.
Segway. That was my confusion.
It's not the Latin word, I don't know.
So these two words, Mishum Chashada, are the Segway... Did I get that right? To a whole new sugya. I'll give you an example what this sugya is all about, called chashada. There's something called a gabbait stocker, and he collects the charity and he divvies it up amongst the poor people. Now, let's say the money is getting ruined. They used to have copper coins, and with the passage of time, the copper got tarnished and it lost its value. So now the gabbai, he's in charge of preserving the value, the money of the aniyim. So at this point, when he knows that he has no ani right now, but he wants to maintain the value, so what he should do is, he should go out into the marketplace and find someone who's willing to exchange copper coins for silver coins. Obviously, you'll have to give a lot of copper for a little silver, but nevertheless, it'll save the loss of this copper. And the question is, does he have to go out to the marketplace and find someone who's willing to make that exchange? Or can he do it himself? Take out a coin, of a silver coin from his pocket, put it in the potty, in the piggy bank, and take the nechoshes, the copper for himself. So that's called Mishum Chashada. Why? Because whenever you're exchanging something, there's a higher value that you can get and a lower value. So chashada means that if he does this for himself, people are going to suspect him that he's offering the pati, meaning the stock of money, a cheap/price. He's not giving the market price. And again, it really becomes complicated because it could be the market price itself fluctuates, and if he would if you would look, you know, harder or longer for an extra couple of days, he might find someone who's willing to pay a higher rate. But he says, you know what? I don't want that hassle. I'm gonna buy it off for the lower rate. So that's called chashad. Here also, let's get back to our sugya. You're the mafkid, you own the chametz. I'm the nifkad, and I'm holding on to your chametz. It's getting really late. It's about to be the last hour. Now, we hold like Rabbi Meir. The fifth hour is still mutter. And Rebbe advocates, go out and sell it. And we're saying, according to Rabbi Yosef, sell it to a Jew. Abaye asks Rabbi Yosef, why do you hassle him? Whenever you have to go out to the market to find out, buy it, that's a real hassle. Especially it's Erev Pesach, it's the fifth hour, you know. It's 11 o'clock in the morning. That's the last thing you want to do is, you know, put up a sign, I'm selling loaves of bread, yes, who's buying it, you know. Yeah. Why doesn't he just eat it himself and evaluate how much it's worth, put that money aside, and when the mafkid comes, either before Pesach or after Pesach, he'll give him the money. So Gemara says, Mishum Chashadah. We're going to suspect him, not you and I, but somebody on the street, as we discussed last night, there's a lot of swindlers out there, right? And somebody on the street is going to say, you know what? This Yochanan guy, who is he? You know, he's eating the mafkin's chametz. You know what? He took the lowest value you can think of, or maybe even dip below that, and he put it aside. And people are going to suspect him. So in order to avoid chashad, we're going to obligate him, and Rebbe imposes that, to go out into the shuk and sell it on the open market and see what monies he can get on behalf of the mafkin. And we're not going to allow him to go ahead and make this exchange on his own, taking the chametz and eating it himself and putting the money on the side. Tisanya, I see it's getting late, but let's see if we can just read another few, and then David, you're on. Tisanya, we learned in the Braisa, Gaboit Stoker, She'en Lehem Aniyim L'chalek. So they have these copper coins, and right now there are no Aniyim to receive them. So the best thing you could do in order to preserve the value of this stock of money is partim. Partim means you do an exchange, right? This was a whole, you know, a whole enterprise during the time of Chazal. Exchange, you know, today also it became, you know, this, it's a whole business, a major industry called exchange industry, right? So partim lacherim. What the gabbai is required to do now is find someone out there in the marketplace who's willing to give silver coins and receive in return the copper coins. The ain partim liatzma, but however, the gabbai himself is not allowed to take out a silver coin and make the exchange himself. And then another case, which is also mentioned in the Braisa, is Gaboy Tamchui. Now, Tamchui is what we call a soup kitchen, meaning that here we're buying food, simply basic staples, on behalf of the poor people. And now I have these staples. Now, what happens to food with the passage of time? Anybody? It spoils, right? And Ein Lehem Aniyim L'Chalek. Once again, you know, the aniyim are not there to eat the food. So you have to freeze this process of spoilage. Is mochrim lacherim? He goes out into the market, finds a buyer, puts the money on the side into the piggy bank. The ain mochrim liatzman. He can't buy the food himself, even if he wants to buy the food. Mishum shenemar, it's a pasuk by Midbar Lamed Beis. It says v'yisem nekiyam Hashem umi Yisrael. Because otherwise, if you do it yourself and you buy the food, people are going to suspect that you're giving a pittance and you're not really reflecting the true value of the food. And therefore, you're not allowed to buy it yourself. David?
It just seems odd to me that we're going to impose a vadai, a big tircha on the fellow to go out and sell to avoid a supposition that somebody might be a cheat. I mean, it's vadai a tircha.
Right,
don't we have a Hesus Kashrus that we assume Jewish people are kosher, or we give them the benefit of the doubt?
Yeah, but not? You know what? When it comes to Gaboit stock, if we don't raise this bar on the standards, you never know where it's going to go. I'll tell you the truth. I shouldn't say this out loud, but you know the Klal Yisrael suspected Moshe Rabbeinu of pocketing money when he collected for the in this week's parasha. And there's a whole halacha that Kavod Tzedakah and Allah have pockets, and some people think they're putting some money in their pockets. So the world is full of swindlers, and what we need is, you know, because the whole enterprise is gabos, is so important to us, we have to impose upon them a very high standard to avoid any chash, because, you know, when you talk about gaboy tztaka, people are out there, and they're saying lashon hara, they're suspecting, and the Torah says, v'isim nikid. That's why, for example, you'll know this right away. If I have almond milk on the table, I'm not allowed to eat meat on that table. Somebody might suspect that I'm eating meat and milk. It's almond milk. It's parva. So we have to find different ways of allowing it. You have to keep it in the original package. This is all v'isem nekiyim. Or, for example, let's say I light my Hanukkah candle on this window, and the wind blows it out. So somebody's going to walk here, and he's going to think, wait a minute, he didn't light a Hanukkah candle. Or let's say I have a house with two, you know, that opens up on both avenues, you know, on Fifth Avenue and Sixth Avenue. So there's a guy going up Fifth Avenue, he doesn't see a Ner Chanukah because I lit it on the other side. So I have to light on both sides. And there are millions of examples. The Encyclopedia Talmudit, which is an unbelievable, it's one of the greatest contributions to Torah knowledge in this century. When I say this century, I mean the last century, you know, because we're only, it has an article of, I think it's about 15, 20 pages long, called Chashada. I'll open up these, like, I'll show you inside. Sugyas upon sugyas and shas about how we bend overboard to make sure that people shouldn't suspect us. V'yisem nekiyim Hashem u'Yisrael. So let's just... let's just read one more line, and then we have at least we have a place to stop. Amalei Rav Adam Armasla l'Rav Yosef beferish amart lon. You said to us explicitly, right? Say umochran l'nachrim. You know, when you know, Rav Yosef had amnesia. I don't know if I ever told you this. So. And if I told you, I already forgot.
I think I heard this once.
Yeah, Rav Yosef suffered from amnesia. See, all over Shas, you know, Rav Yosef is always trying to remember what he originally said, and sometimes he contradicts because he doesn't remember what he said. So Rav Adam Bar Masna reminds Rav Yosef that we heard from you explicitly that when Rebbe recommended, or shall I say, insisted that Yochanan at the Shal Chamishas go ahead and sell it, he said to him, Seyu Mochum Lenachrim. Sell it to Goyim, which means that he can't sell it to a Jew. It's already the fifth hour. Kirav Yehuda, reflecting the sheet of Rav Yehuda. And therefore, the maskot of this whole long, shall I say, somersaults in the sugya, is that we paskin like Rav Yehuda. And Chometz is asur in the fifth hour. So let's just make a note of where we got up to here. One second. So we're up to the bottom, well, not completely the bottom, but almost the bottom of Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, Amar Rav Yosef. Okay then? So I have a Chumash class if anyone's around, and if not, let me wish you a Shabbat Shalom. Okay, thank you so much.